Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
College football summer is no time to slouch because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, into the 8 o'clock hour we go. Payne and Pendergast here on Sports Radio 610. Hour from now, take a mania. Can somebody take down Mel Kiper Jr.'s horrible take from the draft where he said that we know how, we the evaluators, the Mel Kipers know how to evaluate quarterbacks. The NFL does not.
Right. He added me at the NFL teams don't know how to evaluate quarterbacks. I would agree with that to a large degree. But then he said, we do.
Yeah.
We do.
We do.
This is going to be a really good take of mania, everybody. Just like last week, honestly, any one of there's several candidates that would have been winners in previous weeks.
Yeah.
And would have held it for a while. But these last couple of weeks have been gold.
Yeah. Gold. It's been good. It's been really, really good. So tune in at 9 o'clock for that. We will see if anybody can take down Mel Kiper, who, by the way, we're not going to go deep on Pope talk on this show. I've heard some sports shows doing that. We won't. I just want to point out that the funniest Pope memes yesterday on the interwebs were the memes of Mel Kiper Jr. screaming that the Vatican didn't elect Shedeur Sanders as the next pope. That was pretty funny. So good job, Internet. Keep it up. All right, so the Astros, Seth. We are exactly 36 games into the season. 18-18. 500 record. It feels a little miraculous when you consider that 21 of the 36 games, they've scored three or fewer runs. Now, the pitching has been outstanding. The pitching's been really, really good. For the most part this year. Fifth in ERA right now, I want to say, the Astros are.
The pitching is fifth in ERA, but the bats have the fifth lowest ERA.
Yeah, it's a yin and a yang.
So actually, honestly, if you want it as simple as possible, a good illustration of why they're 500.
Yes.
Okay, yep. Fifth in ERA for the pitchers, fifth in ERA, and a fifth worst ERA for the batters.
So that all, you know, do the hokey pokey, turn yourself around. They're 18-18. This time a year ago, they were 12-24. That was rock bottom for the Astros, and they were embarking on an early part of the season where they would wind up at one point 10 games back of the Mariners. They'd eventually totally eliminate that 10-game deficit by the All-Star break. Like, they went on a tear to do that. They went 74-49, the Astros did, after that start. That's a 97-win pace over a 162-game season. So they were, from 12-24 on, you know, 12-24, I was a wake-up call or whatever, but they were excellent from that point on. And I guess the question is, and I'm going to dig into some individual, we will dig into some individual players here. Some of the comps between this time a year ago and now are startling of individual players. But without being able to fully recall how angry or how bad we felt about the Astros, Seth, at 12-24, I feel almost similarly about this 18-18 version of the Astros. I don't know if I feel... if I feel any more confident in this team than I did at 12-24 a year ago.
The biggest difference by far right now compared to last year is that there's no Jose Abreu dynamic, where because when the Astros got off to the bad start that they did, it was miserable. It looked almost mathematically impossible at times that they would ever actually be able to dig themselves out, no matter who they had on the roster. But they also, they had Kyle Tucker. They had Yordan, who was normal Yordan. They had Alex Bregman, remember him?
Yeah.
So that part of it was... It was especially frustrating because they were so underperforming in so many ways, and the pitchers were underperforming. So the pitchers really were just drastically abysmal and awful.
Yes.
This, I don't know. I've got more of a blah feeling about them, yeah. Whereas last year I was genuinely freaking the hell out.
Yeah.
This team, I'm like, all right, I guess I'm going to wait and see what Paredes and Christian Walker, and I don't know enough of these guys. DiCenzo's had a nice run in a stretch. Great. So be it.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing. It's just not as talented a baseball team. You take Alex Bregman and Kyle Tucker off the team, and, you know, Isak Paredes, fine big leaguer. You know, that's fine. Kyle Tucker, there's been no suitable replacement for yet, and he is tearing it up in Chicago right now. I was for the trade. I understood the trade. This is the fallout that if you were for the trade like I was for Kyle Tucker, that you've got to deal with here. Like, this was a possibility that Isak Paredes is, you know, just kind of an average player. Hayden Wisniewski has been inconsistent, shown some signs of some things, but been inconsistent. And Cam Smith's just a young player that you're going to have to wait for him to be any sort of, the same way you had to wait for Kyle Tucker when he was young. You're going to have to wait for him to be any sort of substantial part of a contender, it would seem.
Right. The difference is, the frustrating part for me this year, it's opposite of Jose Abreu. With Jose Abreu, we were wondering, all right, how long are they going to continue and drag out this failed experiment?
What's the exit strategy here?
They're sending him down to rookie ball and whatnot. With Cam Smith, the frustrating thing is, look, this is not an Astros team like days of yore where you can have a struggling rookie on the team like you had with Kyle Tucker in 2018. And at the end of the day, it's not, you know, no skin off my back. We've got production to burn
Springer,
on this squad.
Springer, Correa, Bregman, Altuve, Yuli.
Yeah,
everybody.
With Cam, it's like, all right, well, why is he not down in Double A?
Yeah.
I get what you guys are doing with him, and I totally 100% agree with his upside. But seriously, what the hell?
Yeah,
like Cam, Kyle Tucker in his rookie season played in 28 games, had a 141 batting average, 439 OPS.
Yeah.
He was untouchable, you know, but that was a different time. That was a different era.
Yep, it sure was. Some of the individual performances are just this time a year ago. And now the biggest one is Hunter Brown. This time a year ago, Seth, this was about the time Hunter Brown turned it around.
Yeah.
This coming Sunday will be the 1 year anniversary. I was looking this up of the relief appearance that Hunter Brown made, which kind of sparked his turnaround. He had gotten taken out of the rotation, came in for a 5-inning relief stint, and I either shut out, I think it was the Tigers or somebody shut out or gave up one run. It was a really good, total opposite of what he'd been. This time a year ago, he was 0-4 with an 8.89 ERA and a whip of over 2. Like, he was averaging over 2 runners on base allowed each inning. He's 5-1 now with a 1.67 ERA, and what's even just as incredible, his FIP, which is kind of sort of like what your ERA should be based on the contact that you're giving up, is a league-leading 1.81. Like, he's dominant, and it matches every single part of the eye test with Hunter Brown. Like, he's gone from the worst pitcher in baseball a year ago to maybe the best pitcher in baseball now.
When Alex Bregman recommended to him that he throw his sinker, and they tweaked his pitch selection otherwise a little bit, he changed his approach, and he just became a completely different guy.
Yep.
And Hunter Brown now being the guy that you feel best and most solid about is that I never would have predicted that a year ago.
Even after
he made his turnaround, we were kind of just waiting to see, okay, what exactly is he? Coming into this season, I was wondering, okay, just I want to be 100% sure about it. I don't want to get ahead of myself here. And now it's getting harder and harder to make arguments against him.
It does make me wonder. Like, I mean, Alex Bregman sees the game at a higher level than most human beings do. He's a very cerebral baseball player. It does make me think, like, okay, what are we paying these coaches for?
Well, I always wonder with that though too. It's not. There's a chance that the pitching coaches at some point had suggested that he add his sinker.
Yeah.
And that maybe in the conversation, Hunter Brown says something like, I don't know, they want me to throw my sinker, and Bregman's like, do it.
Yeah, he needed the stamp of approval from Bregman.
Yeah. I've never been 100% comfortable with the way that story's been framed, just because there's a lot we don't know about it.
Yeah, for sure.
Because if I'm going to criticize any of the managerial decisions or the coaching or anything else with the Astros, the pitching coaching and the pitching analytics is going to be the last, because their track record is immaculate. So I'm not going to say, I just don't have it in me to be like, oh, those bums, it was Alex Bregman that fixed Hunter Brown.
It's something that just pops in my head. Now, the opposite of Hunter Brown is Ronel Blanco, who this time a year ago was the only good thing going. He had four of their 12 wins 36 games into the season a year ago. He was 4-0, 2.23 ERA, but his FIP, his should-be ERA, was nearly double that. So you kind of see it coming a little bit. He's 2-3 now with a nearly 5 ERA. And I just think, you know my take on Ronel Blanco, Seth. I think he has just settled in where he's your classic fourth or fifth starter who, if you get 5 innings out of him or 6 innings and he gives up 3 runs and keeps you in the game, that's the best you can hope for with him.
It really is where, I mean, he had the first half of the season, like whether you want to call it luck or whatever, it was kind of statistically flukish. Mm-hmm. And it ended up in the second half, he wasn't as good. You know, he's a career 3.53 ERA guy, but in 3 of his 4 seasons, he's finished with 4.5 or higher ERA.
Yeah.
So where does he settle in? I don't know, just viable starting pitcher, maybe.
Yeah.
But there's still time, obviously.
Yeah. It's interesting because Hunter Brown flipped one way, Ronel Blanco's flipped the other way, and then yet here's Fromber, who 36 games into the season. Now, keep in mind, Fromber went on the IL for a stint in the beginning of the year last year. So at this point, he had only started 4 games. His ERA is nearly identical. His FIP is nearly identical. His WHIP, his walks, hits per innings pitch, is actually better this year than it was this time a year ago. I say that to say that Fromber wound up having a pretty good season last year. So I think this is, if you're somebody who's worried about Fromber's start this year, just know that it's nearly identical to the start that he had this time a year ago.
And he's had 5, I believe, quality starts so far, but then he's had 3 bad performances.
Right.
And with Fromber, I think it's just, sometimes it's bad luck of it being earlier in the season that some of your bad performances stack up. I'm not overly freaking out about him.
Yeah.
And just to tidy up the Ronel Blanco stuff, to be like, it's not quite fair for me to bring up his 4 seasons in Major League Baseball, because he's only pitched 34 innings so far. His first year in the majors, he pitched 6 1/3 innings. His second year, 52 innings. Like, last year was the first year he was actually a full-time starter the entire season.
Yeah, I think that's good to point out. Absolutely. Josh Hader, way better this year than he was a year ago. He was a big reason why they started 12-24 last year. 5.63 ERA. Still striking out a bunch of dudes. But even appearances when he came in, and it wasn't a safe situation, he was giving up home runs. Like, he just didn't look good. He's been excellent this year, Josh Hader has. He's been really good so far. He's a big reason why they're 18-18 instead of 12-24. All right, so a few of the hitters, man. Jose Altuve was through the roof this day. They were 12-24 with Jose Altuve having a .331 batting average and an over 900 OPS. He's an 89 OPS plus right now, which means he's below average, 11% below average.
Across the board, he's just not himself. This is, as we talked about with Lopez yesterday at the toss and a couple times during the show, I'm not freaking out about this all of a sudden being, oh, this is what Jose Altuve is as an old player. He was good last year.
Yeah.
It was a drop from the previous 2 seasons, but last year he was in line with a lot of other seasons historically. This is a slump, and now maybe as he gets older, he's gonna have more slumps than he did when he was younger, but this current stretch, there's no part of me that thinks that these are the numbers Jose Altuve is gonna end up with at the end of the season.
This may be the most improbable thing about the Astros starting 18-18, and I say that from a standpoint of, like, I feel like they're 18-18 and they should be worse than that. That maybe the most remarkable thing is that Yordan Alvarez through 36 games last year had a .239 batting average and a .743 OPS, which in Major League Baseball is about average, but for Yordan Alvarez, that is just abysmal.
That's a slump.
His slumps
before this year, his slumps have been, he's at slightly above average Major League.
Yeah, like a .792 OPS. That's a slump. But he is the one Astro that I think has probably had the performance of the team most tied to his performance. When Yordan is going, the Astros are winning. There's no player that has a bigger gap between their OPS in wins and OPS in losses than Yordan Alvarez through the last few years. It's like a difference of 1100s in wins in OPS and being in the 600s in losses. That the most remarkable part of them actually starting 18-18 is that Yordan Alvarez is an 85 OPS plus guy. He's a below average hitter. He's got a 646 actual OPS and a 210 batting average. And he's missed a few games now with this hand injury. And they've found a way to win 18 games with him performing even worse than he was performing when they started 12-24 last year. They're like, this is the one thing that flies in the face of the team's performance is Yordan stinking. And them actually still finding ways, largely through pitching, to win games. I guess I say that to say that if he starts hitting again and this pitching stays where it is, the Astros are going to be in pretty good shape.
I think the Altuve and Yordan are the biggest guys that you can just lean on and say it's very unlikely that both these guys don't end up playing really good baseball at some point this year. And that if you're trying to tip yourself over that 500 barrier, that alone makes a huge, huge difference. And we talked about this yesterday too, and one of our listeners brought it up. The big question mark is always going to be, man, all of these guys are used to having Kyle Tucker in the lineup, except for the large stretch of time that they missed with Kyle Tucker last year. And this is the new reality. There's no Kyle Tucker coming up the pike that's going to take any of the pressure off of Yordan.
Yep. No, there is not. Do you remember Jeremy Pena getting off to the start he got off to last year? I was doing this. I had to look and make sure I had the right season. Last year, amidst their 12-24 start, Jeremy Pena had a 326 batting average and an 831 OPS. I don't remember that at all. I don't remember
I didn't remember it being as good, just like I didn't remember Jake Myers being his start to the season being as good as it was last year.
Yeah.
That was one of the things where we were. I remember talking about that we had to consciously acknowledge some of the good performances offensively because the pitching was so bad and because the record was so bad.
Yeah.
It just your gut reaction was always like, this team stinks and everybody stinks, and you ignored some of the actual really positive things that were going on with the bats.
Yeah. God, they need Yordan back, man. They need Yordan back so bad in this lineup. It's just such an uninspiring lineup.
Yeah, they need Yordan with a healthy hand and with just whatever the hell's going on with him.
Yeah.
They need classic Yordan.
Good back. Yordan, no doubt. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday. All right, up next, Seth asked Nick Caserio to name a couple undrafted free agents we should keep an eye on with this team. He actually volunteered a couple names. I think based on that, and an evaluation that we got on one of these guys, we may have found Seth's adopted undrafted son yesterday. And I'll go back and look. I'll go today and look at him with my own eyes. But we'll tell you who that is coming up next. All right, we got to pick out an adopted undrafted free agent for Seth Payne this training camp. I don't know what our hit rate is on the undrafted free agents you've adopted making the team.
I don't think a single one has.
Really?
Yeah,
what kind of parent?
I'm a sucker. I'm like a guy with low self esteem.
Could be
dating sevens, and I'm stuck in Fourville.
Deadbeat undrafted free agent dad. You are. You're a horrible parent. All right, so let's find the next undrafted free agent here that we adopt. Here was Nick Caserio with us on Wednesday this week when Seth asked him give us some advice. Give us a couple recommendations in the undrafted free agent pool.
There's a couple guys in there to have an opportunity to potentially compete for some reps. I would say Tafuna, the defensive tackle from Utah, done some decent things, 6'3", 300 pounds. Good playing style, has some toughness to him, really good kid. And the receiver from Minnesota, I know, probably be an uphill battle there, but Jackson, he had a really good career. He kind of falls into the football player category. Maybe didn't run fast relative to some others, but really productive with his opportunities. He did a good job this year and then in years past as well. So those are a couple guys.
Okay, so it's hard to get Nick to gush about anybody, any rookie. Yeah. Like, Cade Stover's the outlier. Remember last year, Cade Stover, Nick in the press conference after they drafted him, talked about all the elite traits that he had, and we had
targeted. Yeah.
Like, so it's interesting because, like, one out of every, like, three or four or five, you know, Nick, even just everyday, like, non-rookies, like, you ask him about guys and he gives a very measured evaluation. Then you're asking about Danico Autry and the guy's beating people up in a back alley and he's a bad MF-er. Like, it's very interesting to me sometimes when Nick goes over the moon. I like it, but he's very measured on the undrafted guys. Understandably so. It is an uphill battle, especially for a receiver to make the team. Seth, before we dig into this undrafted crop, Todd McShay had a very different tune about Daniel Jackson, the receiver out of Minnesota, yesterday on his podcast.
The Houston Texans brought in undrafted free agent named Daniel Jackson, wide receiver from Minnesota. He was at the combine, okay? Quicker than fast slot, okay? Like, when you watch him, it's like, he's one of my Twitch guys. I love slot receivers. I love Twitchies. He didn't run a 40 at the combine because he's not the fastest guy in the world. But I talked about that twitch and the quickness and the body control. He ran a 4.07 short shuttle, Mitch. You know what that was at the combine? No one talked about it. No one talked about it. Second fastest of all the wide receivers. Then he went and ran the 3-cone, 6.78. It was a fourth fastest of all the wide receivers. Those are important drills.
Okay.
They are important drills. Especially when we were talking with Nick about Jalen Noel and his measurables and everything, and then we talked about Wes Welker and his measurables. Wes Welker ran a 4.7 40.
Right.
You wonder why Wes Welker went undrafted when it came to just top end burner speed. But when it came to, I think with Wes Welker, it was the 20 yard shuttle. He was in the 99th percentile. All that short area quickness. Yes, Daniel Jackson has those things. The big question though is, he's on a team now where, like, he's got classic slot receiver traits. He's smaller, but he's got really good short area quickness. He's on a team that traded for a slot receiver and then drafted a slot receiver. And where is the spot for you? And then this is the key. Has limited special teams experience. His chance and his opportunity to actually make the team is going to have to be on special teams most likely. But I think totally could totally be a guy that's on the practice squad.
Yes.
because he doesn't have all the measurables that make him a huge prospect, but he did produce in college and he's got a certain savvy to him that you're looking for smaller, quicker guys. He's just got an understanding of the spacing and finding the soft spots in the zone and all that other stuff that coaches love to see on tape, but you got to prove that you can do it in the NFL.
He has the makings of being one of those guys at training camp, Seth, that when it comes to media watching the training camp,
oh yeah,
that after a few of the practices, we're like, huh, okay. It's Daniel Jackson.
Because he becomes Graham Mertz's go-to guy.
Yeah.
Graham Mertz just loves him. And Graham Mertz has been working out with him already before.
Yeah.
So these two develop a relationship.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, oh boy, boy, that I'll tell you what, Graham Mertz might push for a starting job this year.
Okay.
If he can just bring Daniel Jackson along with him.
That's funny.
Did you see him out there versus those other undrafted rookie free agent defensive backs?
Right.
Oh my gosh.
All
yes.
right, so are you sold on Daniel? I mean, Nick didn't go over the top with his sales pitch about Daniel.
Yeah.
Hey, he's got an uphill battle.
It's almost like when you go into a shop and you're like, you have any of this discontinued item? Like, I don't know. Let me go look around in the back here
check.
A little bit.
I might have a Daniel Jackson back here. I might.
McShay,
though, pretty good sales pitch by McShay.
He mentioned Junior Tafuna.
Yeah.
Nick did as well.
Yes, he did.
Junior Tafuna, like, this is... Okay, if you watch Junior Tafuna on film, especially if you watch his highlights, you might be like, oh my gosh, this guy's got everything I want. He uses his hands well. He's strong. Look at that. He's got a physicality to him. He's Polynesian.
He's a steal.
Oh, this is everything I want in a defensive tackle.
Polynesian.
Except he's 300, he's 6'3", 300 pounds. So
it's
when he's, and he's not, you know, he's kind of, he's athletic, but not enough to, you know, be looked at as a pass rushing defensive tackle.
Right.
So he does some really good things against the run, but he's undersized.
Mm-hmm.
I almost look at him like a, I look at a, a higher upside version of Kurt Heinisch.
Okay.
I think that he does some things really well, and he might end up only being a rotational player in his career, but he's got to figure out a way to be just, he has to be immaculate with his technique, because when he doesn't use his hands well, he gets knocked around a little bit.
Yeah.
But there's definitely something to him.
Yeah.
Like, he's got a good feel for it, and he's just, he wasn't blessed with incredible size.
No, but that's a group that, I mean, that's one of the older groups on the team. You know, if you're able to hang around, like Tommy Togiai hung around last year and ended up playing in playoff games for the time, making plays too.
Right, right. You know, yeah, like so, yeah, and I'm not, yeah, any of these guys, I'm not predicting that they're going to be the next Arian Foster.
No, but if they can hang around, you know?
No, and it's a classic too. One of the biggest things with rookies is just, do you know your role? Do you play your responsibilities? Do you know the playbook? Because a lot of the, when it comes to the rotational players, they just want guys they can trust.
Yeah.
So him versus, his when he has opportunities in preseason games, maybe to go against starters on other teams or just in the padded drills during camp, that's where he's really going to just have to flash and show that he, what he did is, by NFL standards, he's an undersized defensive tackle.
Right.
You know, he's, for a guy that he looks kind of like a run stuffer, he's small for a run stuffing defensive tackle,
yeah.
But he can make it if he's really nails with his technique.
Yeah, it's a good point. Just so you know, 6'3", 300, small. For defensive tackles. It sounds big.
If you're not a good pass rusher.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. That's right. What about this Eli Cox? The
Eli
center?
Cox is intriguing because he, and just by the way, the two guys, Eli Cox spent 6 years in college.
Okay.
So Tafuna is 24 years old. He spent 4 years in college. He's from Utah, so I'm wondering if he went on mission already. That's always a good fan. I love talking to these guys about their missions.
Yeah.
If he is Mormon. I don't know if he's Mormon or not.
Right, right.
But he's from Utah, and he's a 24-year-old rookie.
The Venn diagram favors him having gone on a mission, yes.
So Eli Cox spent 6 years in college and has played guard but settled in at center and is very, very, very athletic. Some of his combine drills were some of the best scores of a center in the past 3 decades. Mm. But he didn't produce like a draft prospect in the NFL.
Yeah.
So I think there's upside there with his athleticism, and you wonder how much of it was coaching, how much of it was just who knows what his injuries were or whatever. But there's definitely something there. That's a great guy to take a flyer on as an undrafted free agent. And I think he probably chose the right team to come to because that it's anybody's guess who the starters are on the interior offensive mm-hmm. line, and especially at center. I think that's a wide open competition, and depending on which guy wins the job, I think that they might see Eli Cox on the practice squad as a guy that's got some upside to him.
Yeah, I think it's funny. Look, the three guys you just mentioned, the undrafted guys that are going to be on the grass today practicing with all the, you know, with it's Texans rookie minicamp today. You know, If I were an undrafted guy and I'm an interior offensive lineman, I would look to go to the Texans. If I were an interior defensive lineman, I think the Texans – there's no great spot for any of these guys to land. Daniel Jackson's the most interesting one just because, as Nick pointed out, it's an uphill battle to make the team. And yet, you know, like after the first four guys, after the two drafted rookies and Nico Collins and Christian Kirk, man, it's a wide-open competition. Like there's no sacred cows in any of those. You know, John Metchie's job is on the line. Xavier Hutchinson, they like. His job's on the line. The guys they brought in free agency are all one-year, $2, $3 million deal type of guys who have done things at times in the NFL, but there ain't anybody there who's gotten a big money contract where you go, well, we got to keep this guy, you know?
I'm looking at Eli Cox on his spider chart. It reminds me. It looks, if you just look at the colors, it looks a lot like a slot receiver where the... All the speed drills are all pretty impressive, but then you get to the physical measurables for Eli Cox, and it's, you know, his wingspan, his arm length, his hand size, all 7th percentile, 1th percentile, 9th percentile.
Yeah.
He's got very short arms, which somehow has all become, it's almost become like a politically charged topic. Like, oh, don't you dare talk about somebody's arm length. You're an armist. Like, no.
Oh, yeah.
If you have short arms, you got to do something to make up for it. And Eli Cox, the center, struggled against size and power in college. So, you got to figure out a way to use technique and athleticism to overcome those elfin arms.
Kentucky, right? You went to Kentucky?
Yeah.
So who's it going to be? Who are you adopting? Here's the papers. Put in a name and sign at the bottom,
sir. I'd like to wait. The early running has me for Junior Tafuna.
Okay.
But we'll have to wait until we get through. Let's wait until the first week of training camp.
Okay.
I got to see these guys just actually do, you know, doing actual football drills versus guys with shoulder pads.
The orphanage of undrafted free agents, like looking at their watch with Seth, like, are you going to pick somebody here already? Are you going to pick?
Yeah, no. Listen, I'm a man of means. Yeah. I just take my time.
Yeah.
And until I'll adopt you when it's politically advantageous for me to adopt you.
You know, the answer can be, I don't adopt anybody. How do you like that,
right,
orphanage?
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stop being so impatient. this is a follow-up to the Mel Kiper being mad about Shador Sanders not being named the Pope. The Vatican talked. The Cardinals don't know how to evaluate a Pope. We do. Oh, I can't wait to play that audio at the top of the hour.
So this new Pope, he's from Chicago?
Yes. He went to Villanova, I believe.
Is he a sports fan?
Yeah, he's been spotted.
White Sox or Cubs?
White Sox. He's a White Sox fan. Yeah,
okay.
He's a White Sox fan. So he tries to help support the poor. You know, White Sox in Chicago, they're the poor compared to the Cubs in their Wrigley Field with their big full bleachers and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Villanova. That was a big topic on my timeline yesterday because along the lines of the Mel Kiper and the sports angle to the Pope is like, how did Notre Dame let a Chicago kid slip away back during the evaluation period?
Yeah.
How did they let Pope slip away?
What do the Pope do? They what do they do when they have conversations with all the, because they're all from different nations and everything? Do they speak in Latin still? Do they have to know Latin to be a Pope?
He spoke in Italian and then in one other language, and I can't remember what it was. I don't know.
Do they speak Italian like when over there in Popeville when all the bishops are meeting with the Pope and everything?
It's a good question.
Tell us.
Intimate Pope knowledge, if you've got it, send it to us. 713-572-4610. Okay, I got to check during the break and see if this is true. Bill Belichick's girlfriend got banned from the UNC football facility, LOL. I need to check. That may not be true. It's a text. But I'm going to check this during the break, which would be a major development.
Looks like Italian is the official language of the Vatican.
Makes sense,
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. Everything's so different around all that. I didn't want to just assume it was Italian.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Top of the hour, take a mania for sure. We will have that. Up next, NFL team is doing something for minicamp that I pray the Texans do someday. We will tell you what it is coming up next. All right. Hey, real quick, just to pay off on the tease, and we'll get to this Belichick stuff. Seth, who should send a gently worded request to the Texans that they move their mini camp to somewhere luxurious like the Rams are doing? The Rams, if you haven't seen it, are holding their mini camp in June in Maui.
Maui?
4-day mini camp in Maui. And, granted,
Hawaii?
Maui, Hawaii, yes.
It's
yes.
not like a Maui, Nevada or
no,
something?
No, it's not like Maui, Iowa. No. Yeah.
Okay.
No, Maui, they're going there for 4 days. Now, there is a charitable component to it because Maui, of course, got devastated, much like L.A. did, devastated by wildfires a couple of years ago. So they're going there, and in conjunction with minicamp, they're going to do some Habitat for Humanity stuff and build some houses. Now, that said, as a media member, I don't know, is Sarah Barshop going and helping build houses there? Well, she covers the Rams for ESPN, used to cover the Texans. Or does she get a nice little 4-day junket, a little 4-day boondoggle to Maui to cover the Rams?
Right. Yeah, and it's pretty a mini nice. Camp. It's not like they're out there doing triple sessions or anything like that. Yeah, that's not bad.
If you could request the Texans to go do their mini camp somewhere luxurious for 4 days in June, where would you ask that they go do it?
In June?
In June, yeah. The Bahamas,
like
maybe?
I don't want to go anywhere where it's going to be hot.
Okay.
Like Hawaii. I mean, Hawaii, it's the same temperature all year round.
Maybe like in a lake town somewhere in Montana?
but it might be too cold up there in June still.
Actually,
I need something. I'm going to be very Goldilocks about this. I need to be in one of the lower altitude mountain resorts in Colorado.
Okay.
Somewhere. I don't want to get too much higher than like 6,000 or 7,000 feet, maybe.
Somebody is very particular about where they want this mini camp to take place. That's funny. No, not that high. A little lower.
Yes.
Lower.
Yes.
Right there.
Like Golden, Colorado or somewhere, right there at the foothills of the Rockies.
Oh, yeah.
Something kind of nice like that.
Do a tour of the Coors Brewery.
Then we can go do our show from a brew pub.
That would be fun. Yeah, go see a concert at Red Rocks at night. That would be great. Yeah.
I've been to Red Rocks.
Yeah, Red Rocks is cool,
Saw Jewel. Yeah, I saw a concert at Red Rocks back in the day. Oh, who was it? Jewel.
Oh, how hard did she rock?
I was dragged there, yes. But I was impressed with the venue.
No, it's good. The venue's great.
It was really cool.
Yeah, the venue's great.
All right, I gotta take Brandy out to go see a performer, somebody. Hey, Jewel's fine. She's just not my cup of tea, okay?
How funny would it have been if the Jets had moved their minicamp to Egypt the year that Aaron Rodgers skipped it? They're like, oh, no, that's fine. We'll come to you to do minicamp. For those who forget, Aaron Rodgers was too busy to do minicamp, mandatory minicamp with the Jets his first year there because he had a vacation already planned to Egypt.
Right. Couldn't be troubled.
Couldn't
with the
cancel
fees and whatnot.
He made $40 million a year. He couldn't cancel his vacation.
My favorite angry Jets fan after that was like, listen, they're not going to be losing a game in October because Aaron Rodgers missed minicamp. Okay. How many of these many losses can we pin on Egypt versus non-Egypt or the general overall attitude of your quarterback who doesn't seem to want to be bothered with actual football all that much?
Technically, that Jets fan was right because Aaron Rodgers hurt himself four snaps into the season. So none of those losses.
That was headed into this past season.
Was it this past season? Or that wasn't his first season?
No, it was headed into this past season.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I couldn't remember which season it was. Okay, gotcha. All right. Texans, take this as I would request Jamaica. That's Amy and I are going to Jamaica at the end of June. So that would be nice. It would have been nice. I would have moved my trip if they had it there. You know, mandatory mini camp in the middle of June, and then at least, you know, if they would have flown us there or something like that.
I wonder if the legalization of marijuana in so many places in the U.S. has hurt tourism in Jamaica at all. Because it always seemed like there was at least a certain percentage of people were excited to go to Jamaica just because everything flowed so freely and easily and everything in Jamaica, whereas now it flows freely and easily down at your local dispensary.
Yeah, I don't know the overall answer. I can tell you it has not depressed the prices at the all-inclusive adults-only resorts.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's not, you know, it's not cheapy. Wasn't bad, but not cheap. All right, Bill Belichick's girlfriend has been banned from the facility at North Carolina.
According to Pablo Torres,
Pablo Torre, who has he has a podcast that's part of Dan Le Batard's network. He's on ESPN. The podcast is called Pablo Torre Finds Out. And on the latest episode, the host reported that Jordan Hudson, Bill Belichick's very intrusive girlfriend, has been banned from the North Carolina football facility. Citing multiple UNC sources, Torre said the decision was made by members of the university's administration in the wake of Belichick's viral interview with CBS Sunday Morning that had no designs of being a viral interview by CBS. But Jordan Hudson was such a menace during that interview, reportedly interrupting. And we've actually got audio. This is probably the most infamous audio that came out of that. She interrupted a question asked of Belichick about their relationship to shut it down.
The other change for Belichick is 24-year-old Jordan Hudson. His creative muse, as he writes in his book.
Make sure that that's the...
Jordan was a constant presence during our interview.
You have Jordan right over there. Everybody in the world seems to be following this relationship. They've got an opinion about your private life. It's got nothing to do with them, but they're invested in it. How do you deal with that?
Never been too worried about what everybody else thinks. Just try to do what I feel like is best for me and what's right.
How did you guys meet?
Not talking about this.
No?
No.
It's a topic neither one of them is comfortable commenting on.
Okay, we got what we needed, Ben. We're good. That's what we needed right there.
I'm just thinking about, like, there were a lot of people that were sticking up for Belichick after that, saying, like, it was unfair that they asked that question. That was such an easy... Those were two of the easiest, most softball questions in the world, and actually would have helped if, as you're doing this interview to sell a book, it actually helps humanize this sometimes seemingly inhuman person. I'm like, no, there's a... That was her not knowing what her job actually is as a publicist. And it sounds like, so we've seen examples of her in this role with UNC, with the UNC football program, and all of the reports coming out of it. It smacks completely and totally of a young person who actually doesn't know how to do their job.
Yep.
And it's becoming headline fodder because they're so incompetent at their job. Like, that's just, it's jaw-dropping that Belichick allowed it to get to this.
It's crazy.
Because his muse.
His muse. That's
in a position
it.
Of prominence and influence, yes.
Here's what Torre said. Two sources at UNC tell me there's been a decision that was made last week by higher-ups inside the athletic department that had hired Belichick to be the highest-paid public employee, not just coach in the state, but employee at $10 million a year. That decision was that Jordan Hudson is no longer allowed in the football building. She's not allowed on the football field. One of the sources said, don't think you'll be hearing much from Jordan moving forward. Torre also revealed Belichick's family is extraordinarily concerned by what has transpired. One Belichick family source told me there is deep worry for how detrimental Jordan can be for not just North Carolina, but Bill's legacy and reputation, everything he's built and worked for over decades. The source added, in fact, the family has been digging into Jordan Hudson as well. Whatever that means. So maybe looking into her background. You know, reportedly, the boyfriend she had before Bill Belichick was a 64-year-old guy who was a businessman.
Right.
Look, I don't want to make assumptions here or anything, but there is, there is some smoke here.
Some smoke. It's fascinating, and it's a football story. I think some other people get upset that, why are you talking about this? It's not sports. No, it's totally all about how it's disrupting the UNC football program, and there's people at UNC who reportedly aren't happy with the way she's injecting herself into conversation.
Yes, yeah. That's the micro part of the sports thing. Absolutely. The macro part of the sports thing is this is the greatest football coach of our generation who behaved in a certain way throughout his entire career. Can you imagine Belichick with the Patriots allowing his girlfriend or any woman who's not, or man who's not part of the program, they're just walking up to him and interrupting him during practice? It's just the behavioral part of it. One other thing I saw people point out about that CBS interview that's a great point that I'm mad at myself for not bringing up. It's not just that Belichick had on that tattered Navy sweatshirt, made him look like a bum. He wasn't wearing North Carolina stuff. You're a coach, especially a new coach that's trying to market the program to recruits or people. Like, everybody's going to see this interview. Yeah, like the same way we wear Sports Radio 610 stuff when we're on Radio Row. You know what I mean? Like, that's like branding 101. How does your branding person who's in charge of all this social media not advise you to wear a North Carolina golf shirt for the interview?
That whole part about, though, that's one of the more human parts of him is that his father was a longtime coach or scout at Navy.
Sure.
And so there's an emotional attachment and a tie there. I could see, I give him a pass on that, except for the tattered part, just because he tries so hard to look like a guy who doesn't care about his public image. There's an irony in that. This is my brand. I'm not going to care about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm going to specifically wear tattered stuff and ugly stuff all the time.
Man, yeah. Okay.
She's had the thing about his girlfriend, though, that is over the course of the 2 years or so that this has been a story, it seems that, and maybe this is just selective, photographs that people are putting out there, the crazy eyes it's in some of the video too. So it's not just selective image or whatever. Yeah. She looks like a person that's steadily grabbing control and having way more influence than she should. She's Jackass Easterby with lady parts.
There may be part of Belichick, honestly, to the stage this has gotten. He might be a bad breaker-upper. You know what I mean? There may be part
of
this.
Maybe he's wanted to break up with her for a while.
Maybe the school is playing the bad cop here. There's probably a big part of Belichick that's relieved she's not allowed in the football building anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll have to hear about what the response by Belichick is.
Yeah,
furious and irate that they're keeping her from him?
Will he put out a statement, which, ironically, will probably be written by Jordan Hudson. people are saying Lake Tahoe is where we should request the Texans.
Oh yeah, that's where we need
that
to go.
That would be
for
great
because
you've got mountains there and the lake and Cal and Hannah, Nick, if you guys are listening, if you could put mini camp, even training camp too at Lake Tahoe for me and Seth, that would be great.
I'll tell you what though, Sean. I mean, there's one thing with Belichick and his girlfriend that I know is that when two young people are in love and the authority figures try to keep it from happening.
Yeah.
It only ends in one of two ways. Either it ends with happily ever after or Romeo and Juliet style.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping for the former.
I am too. I don't want anybody to die in this thing. Yeah. All right. Take a mania. 9 o'clock Fridays. We do it. The champ is Mel Kiper right now. We'll replay the champion's bad take, and we've got several other bad takes that will try to take it down this week in the eyes of the real Pope Zaza, Seth Payne. We will do that coming up next.